Grüezi miteinander, ganz herzlich willkommen und einen wunderschönen guten Tag, meine sehr verehrten Damen und Herren, liebe Freunde aus nah und fern. Ich melde mich zurück aus den Vereinigten Staaten von Amerika, bin wieder eingeflogen und jetzt hier im Institut für fortgeschrittene Gegenwartskunde und angewandte Wirklichkeitsstudien. Und ich freue mich, Sie zu begrüßen zu dieser Sondersendung von Weltwoche Daily, die andere Sicht, unabhängig, kritisch, gut gelaunt und zuversichtlich, aufgezeichnet am Dienstag, dem 21. Juli 2026. Unser Gast heute ist Ihnen wohl vertraut, Fjodor Alexandrowitsch Lukjanow. Ich glaube, das habe ich noch nie in dieser Vollständigkeit hier so erwähnt. Er ist Chefredaktor der Zeitschrift Russland in der Globalpolitik oder eben Russia in Global Affairs. Er ist auch Forschungsprofessor an der angesehenen Higher School of Economics. Und wir kennen uns aus unterschiedlichen Gesprächen und auch vom Valdai-Diskussionsclub. Das ist ein wichtiger Think Tank in Russland, der einst, bevor der Wahnsinn über die Welt kam, wirklich global umspannend funktionierte, mit vielen auch amerikanischen und westlichen Gästen. Aber in den letzten 4-5 Jahren hat sich das etwas vereinseitigt. Aber ich freue mich, dass er hier ist und wechsle jetzt auf Englisch, damit er uns versteht. Wobei Fjodor Lukjanow auch sehr gut Deutsch spricht, vermutlich besser als ich Englisch. Hello, Fjodor, it's great to have you again here in our program of information and destruction, falsification of popular errors. How are you?
Hi, Roger. I'm very fine. I'm here in Moscow. I still expect my holiday, but not earlier than in August. So I hope that we will have a very interesting conversation this time, as always.
I'm sure. I mean, and this depends especially on you, because I can only ask some questions. The intelligent answers, they have to come from your side, but I'm sure
Questions should come as well.
Okay, I try my best. So, where are we standing right now in this war of absurdity, in this never-ending war? Are we heading closer to peace? Are we heading towards nuclear Armageddon? Is my colleague Vladimir Solovyov right when he starts shouting and screaming at the Western elites and their mistakes? What are you saying? What is your assessment? Where are we standing right now?
First of all, when we speak about mistakes, so such terrible, tragic developments like we have now between Russia and Europe, between Russia and Ukraine, it's normally the product of mistakes made on all sides. And I share a view of Mr. Solovyov that the West made multiple mistakes based mostly on the very high degree of arrogance. And that was not just recently, but that was for quite a long time after the end of the Cold War. But of course, mistakes were made by all sides. I think Ukraine will pay enormous price for what for decisions made previously in at different occasions, and on the Russian side, no doubt that it was never a purpose to get involved in such a difficult and, as you rightly said, partially absurd situation. As far as the current mood and current constellation in Moscow is concerned, yes, indeed, we are in the middle of a very intense exchange. I mean, both at the battlefield in the area of Ukraine and the territories which Russia aspires to get, but also the change compared to what we have, what we had when we spoke lastly a couple of months ago. Yes, indeed, this is an escalation from the side of Ukraine and Europe, that Ukrainians with the active and intense help of Europeans managed to increase their potential to reach out to different targets deep in the Russian territory and to deliver certain harm, no doubt about that, including Moscow or the neighborhood of Moscow. That's a new development. It's stupid. It will be stupid on my side to deny. It's really an escalation. We have such a mixed development. On the one hand, I know that in the West, people, those who are in favor of Ukrainian victory, they celebrate this as a break in the war, that breakup of this war, that Ukraine is turning the page towards successful victory soon. And this is the mood which I can distantly feel in Europe in particular. At the same time, we have another development which is being reported less in the West, that on the battlefield per se, Russia is advancing pretty slowly but steadily. And all successful strikes which Ukrainians managed to make against Moscow, against other cities in Russia, they basically don't change the dynamics on the battlefield. Of course, we can debate about the dimension or the scale of harm delivered by mutual attacks, and Russia increased the intensity of attacks as well as a response to Ukrainian long-range strikes. But I would say that at this point, we cannot, still cannot say that any sides prevail. But strategically, on the Russian side, there is a conviction that whatever Ukrainians can achieve by their new capacities, but the final destination of this war will be in favor of Russia. As far as the peaceful solution, political solution might be concerned, no, I don't see it coming, unfortunately. Nuclear Armageddon, as some colleagues here predict, we are not there yet, I would say it in such an accurate form.
Meine Damen und Herren, bitte verzeihen Sie diesen überfallartigen Unterbruch. Ich werde das Mikrofon selbstverständlich dem Moderator gleich wieder zurückgeben. Doch vorher habe ich noch eine ganz wichtige Durchsage. Abonnieren Sie die Weltwoche. Gegensteuer, die andere Sicht, unabhängig, kritisch, gut gelaunt, seit über 90 Jahren. Jedes Abo eine Liebeserklärung an die Meinungsvielfalt. Alle Angaben und Informationen finden Sie unter diesem Video. Vielen herzlichen Dank. I have heard in a conversation with a very well connected person who knows the Russian leadership well, and he told me that there is a growing atmosphere in Russia, among the people, but also among the Russian elite, that they want this war to end. Meaning, the pressure on the president grows, and they say, whatever it takes, end this war. We do not want to waste our youth on these battlefields with the Western support of Ukraine. Just get it over with, Mr. President, whatever means it takes. And there was even talk of observation that this person told me that he was kind of shocked to learn that even the nuclear card, that even the nuclear means are on the table, which was a minority position like a year ago. Some hotheads, you know, around the government were saying that, but now the tide is changing. How do you assess this atmosphere in Moscow? What has to be expected as far as escalation comes from the Russian side?
First of all, I can agree that there is a pretty strong mood in Russia that this war should be ended. But I would disagree with what you said, or what your vis-a-vis said, this formula, whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Of course, no one is happy that the special military operation, which started with the expectation to relatively quickly resolve the security issue in the Eastern Europe, to achieve a change, achieve a different situation in the area, and to stop permanent expansion of NATO or NATO connected organizations to the east, and this never happened. I mean, the expectation that it can be done efficiently and quickly didn't come true. And in this regard, yes, indeed, there is a big willingness to find a solution. I would not say that at this point we are there where your vis-a-vis describes that any measures should be taken from the, so to say, capitulation to the nuclear usage just to stop it. No, it's not the case. What is the case is, of course, the very intense debate, partially open, partially discreet, what should be done to change the dynamics of the situation. And here we have different views. So contrary to what people in the West believe, there is a debate here. It's not maybe not as open as it might be in different circumstances, but it is an intense debate and a very significant variety of views. The expectation on the Western and Ukrainian side that escalation, I mean, those long-range strikes and increasing of Ukrainian military capacity would bring Russia closer to the Putin and Russian leaders closer to the decision to stop it, that's wrong. That's certainly wrong. It's not this effect. There is another thing which you mentioned, that if the thinking here, if they escalate, okay, we escalate as well. And if it will be required to escalate severely, maybe even using the nuclear option as at least as a threat, then it can be done. Not immediately, because not all escalation means of conventional way, conventional type have been exhausted clearly, but it's not excluded. In this regard, yes, I agree with your counterpart that the option which has been seen as something absolutely exceptional and impossible, say 2-3 years ago, now it is on the table as unlikely but possible trump card. Mm-hmm. But again, it's not the case at this point. There is also a debate, of course, among those who consider this mean. There is a debate whether it would work or not, because those advocating this option, they assume that that would have a sobering impact on Europeans in particular, and will bring them to the conclusion that this conflict should be wrapped up in one or another way without allowing the major nuclear standoff. Other people believe that it might fail. I mean, that the position of Europeans will not be to sober up, but rather to escalate further and to get engaged in a full-scale war with Russia. I don't know, because it's always this area, you know it, everybody who has to do with this nuclear deterrence issue knows that it's like, I don't know, Freudian psychoanalysis. it's not about technology, it's not about strategy, it's much more about how to assess intentions and the willingness of the other side, and you can always be wrong. Anyway, what is important, and that brings the situation to the conclusion that we are not close to any kind of diplomatic or political solution. This idea that Russia can be forced to stop military activities by escalation, this idea is certainly wrong. It will not work. What kind of back escalation can be expected? That can be debated. Again, unlike some colleagues here, I don't believe that we are moving quickly to the nuclear phase.
But do you expect, for example, a strike with conventional weapons to a ammunition or drone plant, let's say, in Germany or in other European countries? Is this kind of escalation imaginable at this point of time?
Yes, I think this kind of escalation is unfortunately imaginable. To some extent, in the situation we have now, it will be, from military point of view, it will be absolutely rational and logical. Because what changed in the recent period, year approximately, since those famous negotiations in Alaska between Trump and Putin, what changed is that Europeans managed to turn the whole constellation into something like a military technical conglomerate, which includes both Ukraine and European Union. And Ukraine is the fighting part, and European Union as a strategic rear of Ukraine. And you might be, if you remember debates in Europe, say 2 years ago, when each next step in support of Ukraine, delivery of new ammunition or new discussions about military cooperation was accompanied with big doubts. Is it fine? Is it risky? Is it a terminal crossing of Russian red line or not, and so on? Now you don't hear those considerations at all. Because on the European side, there is a deep conviction that Europe can and should do whatever it takes to support Ukraine. And this is, I must say, it's unfortunately true. I think that's partially this result of Russian hesitations before. Because when Americans and especially Europeans tested those red lines, Russian response was not sufficient enough. Mm-hmm. And they came to conclusion that, okay, Russia is only talking to talk shop. Why not? Why not continue? And the problem with this approach on the European side and on the Russian side is that now we are where we are. And now to break up this trend, Russia will need a very serious escalation to convince the opponents that it's serious. And that's why, coming back to your question, I believe that it might be the case that at some point the plants or ammunition storages in outside Ukrainian territory will be targeted.
What is the reason behind this reluctance on the side of Russia, on the side of the Russian president? Why didn't he answer these crossings of red lines more severely?
That's a good question. Of course, I don't know. I can only guess. I guess that in the thinking of President Putin, the whole operation from the beginning was, yes, about strategic situation in Europe, but it was not intended, by far not intended, to provoke, to launch a big war with NATO. It was never any idea of this. And by introducing different tactical approaches by different means, Russian leadership always tried to limit the conflict to the territory of Ukraine, because from the Russian point of view, this is the problem between Russia and the West, but it's about Ukraine. It's not about, I don't know, conquer Europe or transform Europe or whatever. I think we discussed with you previously, and it's more and more significant to understand that all rhetorics in Europe and in the West that a Ukrainian war is a prelude for Russia to continue to go to, I don't know, after Poland, after Baltic states, after Germany, whatever, after France and so on. That's, of course, absolute nonsense. And behind that, okay, I assume that this is the sincere belief in Europe. It's not a manipulation, but a sincere belief. Let's think this way. And the problem is that in the West, people cannot realize that Ukraine, for Russia, for Russian people, for Russian leadership, for Russian intellectual community, that's an absolutely special case. It has nothing comparable, be it Baltics, be it Poland, be it Armenia, be whatever, Kazakhstan, nothing comparable to Ukraine, because it's about a bunch of all possible motivations. Strategic affairs and the attempt to stop limitless expansion of NATO was one of reasons, but it is combination of everything, of history, culture, religion, humanitarian ties, everything, economy. So, and you should not extrapolate the Ukrainian case on the rest of Europe. Unfortunately, at this point, it seems to be disregarded by all. And the European reaction to this operation created a different situation when Russia is being pushed towards a necessity to make it an all-out war with Europe. Because step by step, logically, we move towards this. Mm-hmm. While it was never the purpose and it was never the idea initially.
Mm-hmm. I'm reading a book now about the history of Russia, which was written in 1944 to 1946 in Switzerland by a writer who was born in Ukraine in the year 1900. His name is Valentin Gitterman, and he writes a fantastic history of Russia. I'm in the first volume. And just to stress your point, what he describes there is the early history of Russia. And if we consider that in the lands of today's Ukraine, in the so-called Dnieper Basin, where all these rivers are, that was like the cradle of Russia. I mean, this is where all started, where the first monarchy was built up, where the Tatars, the Mongols went in and spreading these Russian monarchs and dukes into all directions. And then they reassembled, some in the north, some in the west, and some around Moscow. And if you just read the first chapters, you see that this is a very electrifying chapter of Russian history, which still resonates in today's mind. So I just wanted to stress this point. How do you explain the Western position? How do you make sense of this hatred we see against Russia, again, about this demonization we see that Putin is framed in a system that he's considered to be a new Hitler? You know, he conquers the first country and then he takes the second one, and every kind of diplomatic solution would be appeasement, would be a devilish surrender. How do you explain the Western mentality? How do you make sense of it?
Well, it's a very long discussion. So first of all, relationship between Russia and the European area, European space, has been very emotional and geopolitically driven since quite a long while, probably since 17th century at least. And Russia, which emerged at some point as a very powerful, big and powerful neighbor of European nations, neighbor which initially emerged, yes, indeed, from the offspring of the European culture, but a very special one, from Byzance, influence made by Tatars, very special developments inside different tribes of Slavs, which created then the Russian nation. And what is important, that Russian statehood actually was created without major European participation, based on domestic trends and domestic processes, whether positive or negative, but it was a very much internal development, internal evolution, with factors which influenced, but most of them were not connected to the classical Europe. And then Russia suddenly came to the European political space, not as a newcomer and not as a beginner. So newcomer with the, which started to, I don't know, to look around how to behave, but already as a pretty strong, big power in the East. Mm-hmm. And that, from my point of view, that immediately created this feeling of threat, the feeling of danger coming from Russia. And then we had, of course, many different stages in this development. Some of them, Russia became an integral part of the European political actions, but has always been seen as something from the outside. And if you have an actor inside you, which you consider as something from the outside, there is, of course, makes you nervous. And that was partially the maybe a reason. And then, of course, the Russian ability, Russian capacity to become a big, very big empire, which started to be a real rival to most important European empires, that consolidated this view. Then we can, of course, we can see different periods and different moments when presence of Russia, existence of Russia, has been used by Europeans in different configurations to create a European unity at several stages. Okay, the best unity you can get is when you have a common threat. And in this regard, Russia has not been the only threat to European nations. And inside Europe, we know the history is very turbulent, But Russia was always available as something which could be seen as a threat from the outside, which can unify the rest of European nations. And so you can, the deeper you go into this history, the more very interesting episodes you can find. As far as the current situation is concerned, I think, and I tried to explain it here from the beginning of the Ukrainian crisis, and it's actually quite a difficult thing for Russian people to understand that Russian actions, which were based on Russian perception of insecurity, were seen in Europe, and you know it much better than me, as a ghost of the absolutely terrible European past, which Europeans believed they overcome forever. I mean, all nightmares of the first half of 20th century suddenly came back after a long illusion that war can never happen again in Europe. And suddenly it happened, and no one wanted to deeply and seriously discuss why it happened, because this euphoric feeling of the Europeans and Americans after the Cold War that they achieved the absolutely moral height and all others should just comply to that. That was the, and still now partially is the situation. So I think that Europe is very much afraid of itself, actually, and see Russia as an embodiment of the Europe which they are afraid of.
Das vollständige Video finden Sie jetzt auf weltwoche.ch und weltwoche.de. Den Link dazu finden Sie in der Beschreibung.